Part 2. "Wake up, Hafta," someone said. I woke up. It was Vinok Oi. I stared at it for a moment before gathering enough wit to speak. "Why are you standing in my sleeping chamber?" "I need you awake," it said. "How did you get in?" Oi gave me a look that said, "Really, no." "Never mind," I said. I lifted myself off my sleeping pedestal and moved to my wardrobe to get dressed. I don't usually prefer other people see me without clothing, but it's for their sake, not mine. Lollins don't have a taboo against nudity. "Tell me what's going on, at least."
"A human ship has been attacked," Oi said.
"What?" I looked out from my wardrobe at Oi. "Where? And by whom?"
"In our space," Oi said. "And we don't know. But it gets worse."
"How does it possibly get worse?" I slipped a basic robe onto my body and stepped out of the wardrobe. Other accoutrements could wait.
"The human ship is out of control and being dragged in by the gravity of this asteroid," Oi said. "We have 4 Serti before it hits."
"That doesn't leave much time," I said. "There are 30 Serti in a sir."
"It gets worse," Oi said.
"Stop saying that," I said. I stood in front of Oi now. "Just tell me what's going on."
"There are humans trapped on the ship," Oi said, "including the diplomatic mission from Earth."
"Here is the Odiombo,"
Loom Galfin said, pointing at the image of a tumbling spacecraft on the briefing room monitor. Galfin was the director of the Conclave's ports and facilities. In the briefing room were me, Oi, General Gao, Chancellor Laus, and Regan Byrne. Along the wall of the briefing room stood several of Galfin's subordinates, all of whom looked as if they were lined up to be shot.
Well, and if Odiombo struck the asteroid, it would be the most merciful thing that could be done to them.
"The Odiombo skipped into Conclave space roughly 100 D2 ago," Galfin said.
90 D2 in a Serti, so not very long ago at all.
"Almost as soon as it entered Conclave space, it reported several explosions and extensive damage."
"Do we know what caused the explosions?"
Gao asked, and nodded toward Oi.
"Vinok here told me and Hafta it was an attack."
"We don't know what it was," Galfin said. "At entry, the Odiombo was reporting, verbally and by automated monitoring, that all systems were nominal. The next thing we know, everything went haywire."
"Vinok?"
Gao said.
"My analysts started looking at data as soon as the damage reports came in, cross-referencing with what we know of the Odiombo," Oi said. "The Odiombo is a lend-lease ship, originally an Ormu freighter. The pattern of damage it reported right after the explosions occurred isn't consistent with what might happen with a power system's failure. It is consistent with what would happen if the power systems were attacked to cause secondary damage."
"So an attack," Gao said.
"Seems likely to me."
Oi motioned to Galfin.
"Although I will bow to any additional information our colleague here can offer."
"We're combing through our own data now to see if anyone or anything else skipped in just before or close to the arrival of the Odiombo," Galfin said. "We're back a full sir on the data now, and nothing's pinged."
Tarsum nodded.
"Let's get back to the current situation."
"The current situation is that the Odiombo is heavily damaged and tumbling in Conclave space. The explosions have imparted a small bit of momentum on the ship toward the asteroid, and the asteroid's native gravity is doing the rest. Left unchecked, it will impact in 3 Serti 55 D2.
The image Galfin was showing tracked out and showed the projected path of the Odiombo toward the Conclave's headquarters.
"What will the impact damage here?" I asked.
"No habitats, either general or specialized," Galfin said. "We're not looking at any substantial death toll, but the Odiombo will impact directly on one of our solar power farms, and several surface-level agricultural domes are nearby, which are at substantial risk of damage. How much damage depends on how the Odiombo's power systems fail at impact. Best-case scenario is we lose the solar farm solely from the impact. Worst-case scenario is the ship's power systems fail spectacularly in addition to the impact."
In which case, the asteroid gains a shiny new crater, debris gets thrown far and wide, including potentially into the docking area, damaging other ships, and into other areas of the asteroid, including possibly populated areas, Oi said, which makes the potential death toll a bit more substantial.
And the crew of the ship?
Tarsem asked. 60 crew, 10 passengers, all part of the diplomatic team from Earth, Galfin said. The ship's captain reported 6 dead, 8 seriously wounded from the explosions, most from the engineering department. The dead are still on the ship. The wounded and most of the rest of the crew evacuated the ship via life pods. The captain, executive director, and the chief engineer are still aboard.
But our diplomats are trapped, said Reagan Byrne.
That's what the captain reported, Galfin agreed. The passenger quarters housing your team are sound, but the passageways into their quarters are heavily damaged. There's no way in or out without landing on the hull and cutting our way in.
The problem with that is that the Odhiambo's power systems are damaged, Oi said. They could go at any time. If we send rescue crews and the ship goes up, we lose our people as well as theirs.
You can't just leave them trapped there,
Byrne said, staring at Oi.
We have to rationally judge the risks involved, Oi said, staring back.
It turned to face the room.
And we have to make a decision soon.
It pointed to the image of the Odhiambo.
The ship is 3.5 seri from impact, but we don't have that much time. Right now, if we destroy the ship with our defenses, it's far enough away that we can control the debris and minimize any damage to ourselves and other ships. After that seri, it becomes progressively harder to contain the possible damage. Add to that the fact the ship can go at any time, in which case its destruction is uncontrolled, which makes our risks greater.
Tarsem turned to Galfin.
Loom, he said.
Director Oi's not wrong, she said. Controlled destruction of the Odhiambo is the best option, and the sooner the better. We cannot allow it to impact, and the longer we wait, the more chance the ship's power systems will rupture.
That means potentially sacrificing the diplomats, I said, which is an unacceptable option.
I agree, said Laos, looking at Oi. If the Conclave doesn't at least make the attempt to save them, what does that say about us?
You're asking our rescue crews to risk their own lives, Oi said.
Which is part of their job, Laos said.
Yes, but not stupidly,
Oi replied. It turned to Galfin.
Your estimate for the Odhiambo's power systems to fail, please.
In the next seri? Galfin asked.
Yes.
Given the damage we know about, I'd say 60%, Galfin said. Which means, realistically, the chance is greater, because the damage we know about is the bare minimum possible.
We are asking our people to go to their deaths, almost certainly, Oi said.
Ms. Byrne, Tarsem said, I want to know your thoughts.
Byrne took a moment to collect herself.
I can't tell you I don't want you to save my people, she said. I can't even tell you that I will entirely understand if you didn't. What I can say is that if you don't, I'll recommend to the governments of Earth that your refusal to act not be a factor in future discussions.
Tarsem looked at me after the comment. I stared back, silently, knowing that after all this time he would almost certainly know what I thought of Byrne's realpolitik answer.
How long until we can have rescue crews on the way?
Tarsem asked Galfin. They've been prepping since the Odhiambo's first distress call, Galfin said. They're ready to go when you want them.
I want them, Tarsem said. Send them, please.
Galfin nodded and turned to a subordinate, who handed her a headset conforming to her species.
We'll get them out, Reagan.
Thank you, General, Byrne said.
Her relief flowed off her like a waterfall.
General, we have a complication, Galfin said.
What is it?
Hold on.
Galfin held up a hand while she listened to her headset.
A rescue attempt is already underway.
By whom and under what authority? I asked.
It's being undertaken by the Chandler, Galfin said, after a moment of listening to her headset. It's a human ship, from the Colonial Union. It skipped in right around the time we started this meeting.
I looked over to Tarsem, who was smiling at me. I knew what that meant.
It meant, now aren't you glad I decided to meet with the Colonials, despite your advice?
What do you want to do now? Galfin asked Tarsum.
I want you to tell the Chandler they have a certi to complete their rescue, and after that we're vaporizing the Odiombo for the safety of our headquarters,
Tarsum said.
And I want you to tell them that we are sending a crew to assist if they need it, and to observe if they don't.
Galfin nodded and spoke into her headset. Then Tarsum turned to me. Don't tell me, I already know, I said. I got up.
Where are you going?
Bern asked, looking up at me. I'm going with our rescue team, I said, to observe.
You might blow up, Oi said.
Then the Earth knows I blew up, helping to save their people. And knows the Conclave didn't let the Colonial Union take on all the risk alone. Or sacrifice, I thought, but chose not to say. I knew that was part of Tarsum's math. I nodded to those in the room, and made my way to the exit.
Hofta,
Tarsum said, and I paused at the doorway. I looked back to him.
Come back alive, please.
I smiled, and left.
All right, this pilot is just showing off,
Torm Owl, the rescue shuttle pilot, said to me as we approached the Odiombo and the Chandler. The rescue shuttle contained me, Owl, Ziz co-pilot Liam Hull, whose seat I was currently occupying while Hull loitered in the general cabin, and six fellow members of the Flicked species as the rescue team. The Flicked recognized five genders, male, female, Jial, Yal, and Neuter. Owl was Jial, and Z liked Ziz pronouns accurately stated. I would too, in Ziz's position. Which pilot? I asked.
The pilot of the Chandler,
Owl said, pointing at the monitor that gave Zims his external view.
The Odiombo is tumbling chaotically, so the Chandler is matching its movements.
Why would it do that? I asked.
It's safer for the people running the rescue,
Owl said.
Makes the two ships stable relative to each other. But it's difficult to do because the Chandler pilot has to track the Odiombo's movements precisely.
Once the ship started tumbling, it should continue to do so in the same manner, I said. I think that's close to a thermodynamic law.
Yeah, but that assumes no additional input of momentum,
Owl said, and pointed to the Odiombo in the monitor.
But the Odiombo is damaged and venting all sorts of things, and we can't tell when those venting events will happen. No, it's a mess, so the Chandler pilot's tracking all of that in as close to real time as it can.
Could you do it?
If I wanted to show off, sure,
Owl said. I smiled at this.
But I wouldn't do it with anything larger than this shuttle. Whoever the Chandler's pilot is, it's doing it with an entire ship. If it messes up, you're going to have two ships tumbling down on headquarters, not just one.
We need to tell them that, I said.
Trust me, Counselor, they're way ahead of you,
Owl said. Hail the Chandler, please, I said. Tell them we've come to offer assistance if they wish it. Owl did as he was told, muttering into a headset in his own language while I watched the two human ships tumble in tandem.
The captain of the Chandler is named Neva Bala. It sends its compliments and says that it requires no assistance at this point,
Owl said after a moment.
It says that they are under some time pressure, and incorporating us into their plans would just add to the pressure. It asks us to hold position at 20 clicks relative, that's about 25 chu, and monitor the Odiombo for power surges or rapidly rising temperatures.
Can we do that?
Maintaining a 25 chu relative distance is something we can do on autopilot, and this shuttle's packed with a good amount of sensory apparatus. We're good.
I nodded up to the monitor. Any way we can stabilize the image of the ships so they don't look like they're tumbling? I want to be able to see what's happening without getting vertigo.
No problem.
If the captain of the Odiombo is still on the ship, ask it to send us a real-time data feed, please, I said.
Will do.
Also, Captain Neva Bala is she, not it.
You sure?
I've met her before, I said. Humans generally prefer to not be called it whenever possible.
And the things you learn about people while you're on the job,
Owl said.
Here we go,
Owl said, nodding to the monitor. On it, a lone figure stood in an open airlock on the Chandler, directly across from the Odhiambo. The distance between the two ships was less than 30 plint, about 50 meters in human measurement. Owl was right. Whoever was piloting the Chandler had impressive control. The figure in the airlock continued to stand, as if waiting for something.
"Not a good idea to run off the clock,"
Owl said under Ziz's breath. A stab of light shot from the Chandler, striking across and at a small angle from the figure in the airlock. "They're firing on the ship," I said.
"Interesting," Owl said.
"Why is it interesting?"
"They need to cut into the hull,"
Owl said. Zee pointed at the beam.
"Normally, for a rescue, we'd send a crew over with some particle beam cutters to get through the hull. We have a couple here on the shuttle, in fact, but it takes time. Time they don't have. So instead, they're just burning a big damn hole in the hull with a beam."
"It doesn't look very safe," I said, watching. A venting blast of air puffed out of the Odhiambo, crystallizing in the vacuum wherever the beam didn't turn it into plasma.
"It's definitely not,"
Owl said.
"If there's someone in the cabin they're cutting into, they probably just died of asphyxiation. That is, if they weren't vaporized by the beam."
"If they weren't careful, they could have blown up the ship."
"The ship's going to blow up anyway, Counselor,"
Owl said.
"No reason to try to be dainty."
The beam shut off as abruptly as it began, leaving a 3-plint hole in the Odhiambo's hull. In the monitor, the figure in the Chandler airlock launched itself toward the hole, trailing a cable behind it.
"Okay, now I get it,"
Owl said.
"They're running a cable from the Chandler to the Odhiambo. That's how they're going to get them off the ship."
"Across a vacuum," I said.
"Wait for it,"
Owl said. The figure disappeared into the Odhiambo. After a moment, the cable, which had drifted slightly, tightened up. Then a large container started moving across the cable.
"I'm guessing vacuum suits, harnesses, and automatic pulleys in that,"
Owl said.
"Get them suited up, secure them in a harness, and let the pulleys do all the work."
"You sound like you approve."
"I do,"
Owl said.
"This is a pretty simple rescue plan with pretty simple tools. When you're trying to save people, simpler is better. A lot fewer things to go wrong."
"As long as the Chandler can keep in sync with the Odhiambo."
"Yes,"
Owl agreed.
"There is that. This plan has all its complications in one place, at least."
There were several moments of nothing obvious going on. I took the time to look at the co-pilot monitor set, on which we were tracking the Odhiambo's power and heat signatures. No excitement there, either, which was a good thing. "You might suggest to the Odhiambo's captain that any remaining crew might want to disembark as soon as possible," I said to Owl.
"With all due respect, Counselor,"
Owl said,
"I'm not going to suggest to a captain that it abandon its ship a single moment before it makes that decision on its own."
"Fair enough." I glanced back over to the monitor with the Odhiambo on it. "Look," I said, pointing. The first of the diplomats was making its way across the line, swaddled in a highly reflective vacuum suit, chest in a harness, trailing behind a pulley.
"That's one,"
Owl said.
"9 more to go."
The Chandler collected 7 before the Odhiambo blew itself up. There was almost no warning. I glanced over as the 7th diplomat disappeared into the Chandler's airlock and saw the feeds on the co-pilot's monitor spike into critical territory. I yelled to Owl to warn the Chandler just as the external monitor showed a wrenching jerk, severing the cable between the two ships. Owl zoomed out the picture in time to catch the eruption on the Odhiambo midships. Owl yelled in Ziz's headset, and suddenly the image in the monitor began spinning wildly. As the monitor had stopped tracking with the two ships' movements and had reoriented itself to our perspective, the Odhiambo had begun tearing itself apart. The Chandler had begun moving away from its doomed compatriot.
"Come on, come on, come on!"
Owl was yelling at the monitor.
"Move it, you stupid shit for brains, you're too close!"
I had no doubt Zee was yelling at the Chandler's pilot. And Zee was right, the Chandler was too close. The Odhiambo had now split in two and the pieces were moving independently of each other, with the fore portion now careening dangerously close to the Chandler.
They're going to hit!
Owl yelled. And yet they didn't. The Chandler's pilot yawed and skewed its ship, moving it across three axes in a mad ballet to avoid collision. The separation between the ships widened, too slow for my taste. 50 plint, 80, 150, 300, 1 chew, 3 chew, 5 chew. And then the Chandler stabilized its movement relative to Conclave headquarters and began to pull away at speed from the Odhiambo.
You should be dead! Owl yelled at the monitor. You should be dead! Your ship should be dead! You should all be dead! You magnificent shit-eater!
I looked over to Owl. Are you all right?
No, Z said. I'm pretty sure I've soiled myself.
Z looked over, and on Z's head was an expression that I assumed was of sheer amazement.
That should not have happened. Everyone on the Chandler should be dead. The Chandler should be an expanding cloud of debris. That was the single most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life, Counselor. I'd be surprised if it weren't the single most amazing thing you've ever seen, too.
It might be in the top few, I allowed.
I don't know who that pilot is, but I am going to buy that shit-eater all the drinks it wants.
I intended to respond, but Owl held up a hand, listening into the headset. Then it looked up at the monitor.
You have got to be kidding me,
Z said. What is it?
Those three other diplomats and the Chandler crewmen, Z said. They're still alive.
Owl spoke into Z's headset and zoomed in on the aft portion of the Odhiambo, where the Chandler had burned its hole through the hull. And as we zoomed in, we saw it. A reflecting suit, launching out from the hole, tumbling into space, followed by a second, followed by a pair holding on to each other. The final diplomat and the crewman from the Chandler. The Odhiambo spun away from them, slowly. How much breathable air do you think they have? I asked Owl.
Not a lot, Z said.
I glanced over to the co-pilot's monitor, which still erroneously showed the Odhiambo as a single unit. The floor of the ship was rapidly cooling. All power had shut down, and heat and power were venting into space. The aft of the ship, on the other hand, was warm and getting warmer as I watched. I don't think they have much time, I said. Owl followed my gaze to the co-pilot's monitor.
I think you're right,
Z said, then looked up at me.
You didn't bring a vacuum suit with you, by any chance, Counselor?
I did not, I said, and the very fact of your question makes me begin to regret that very much.
It's fine, Owl said. It just means I have to do this without a co-pilot.
Z pressed a button on his pilot monitor.
Attention, team, Z said. You have 2 DITU to get on your vacuum suits. In 3 DITU, I'm pumping the air out of the hold and opening her up. Be ready to take on passengers at speed. Have emergency air and heat prepared. These people are going to be cold and near asphyxiated. If they die once you get them, I'm leaving you out here.
Inspiring, I said, after Z had finished.
It works,
Owl said.
I've only had to leave them out here once. Now slide in a little more, Counselor. I have to seal up this compartment. Unless you want to try holding your breath for a while. The 4 of them haven't drifted too far from each other,
Owl said, as we were underway to ditch you later. Z put an image on the main screen showing the positions of the diplomats.
And 2 of them are together, so we really only have 3 targets.
A curving line swept through all 3 positions.
We open the gate, bring our speed down, and literally let them drift into the hold. 3 targets, 3 DITU, we go home, we're heroes for the sir.
You'll curse us if you put it like that, I said.
Don't be superstitious,
Owl said. The aft portion of the Odhiambo erupted.
Oh, come on!
Owl yelled. Give me tracking, please, I said. Owl transferred the screen to the co-pilot monitor. The main portion of the Odhiambo's aft was still spinning away from the diplomats, but a large chunk of debris was now launching itself in a different direction entirely. I watched as the shuttle's computer plotted its trajectory. This debris is going to hit these 2, I said, pointing to the paired diplomats.
How long?
Owl asked. 3 DITU, I said. Owl seemed to think about it for a moment.
All right, fine,
Z said. All right, fine, what? I asked.
You might want to make your center of gravity as low as possible. The inertial and gravity systems in this thing are pretty reliable, but you never know.
I hunkered down. What are you going to do, Owl?
It's probably best you wait until it happens. If it works, it will be really great.
And if it doesn't?
Then it'll be over quickly.
I'm not sure I like where this is going.
If it's all the same, Counselor, don't talk to me until it's over. I need to concentrate.
I shut up. Owl pulled up the diplomat's positions on Z's pilot screen and overlaid the trajectory of the debris. Then Z started moving the shuttle forward. Owl stared at Z's pilot screen, typed furiously into it, and never looked up. I, on the other hand, looked at the external view monitor and saw a distant, rising mass of debris and our shuttle moving inexorably closer to it. We appeared to be on a suicide mission, straight to the heart of that debris. I glanced over to Owl, but Z was in focus, all attention drawn to the screen. At almost the last possible instant, I saw on the monitor a white starburst, which I registered, too late, as a vacuum suit we were going to hit head-on, just as the debris rose like a leviathan below us. I sucked in a breath to shout, saw the images on the monitor streak, and then clenched for the violence of the debris smashing into our shuttle from below. As Owl promised, it would be over quickly.
Huh,
Owl said, and spoke into Z's headset.
You get them? Yes. Yes. Right. Good.
Z looked over to me.
Well, that worked,
Z said. What worked? I asked.
High-speed rotation around the target,
Owl said.
It takes a tiny bit of time for the shuttle's inertial field generators to register a new entity and adjust its velocity. If I picked up our new passengers on a straight path at the speed I was going, they would have turned into jelly against the interior of the shuttle. So I rotated us very quickly to give the field just enough time to register their presence and match them to us.
Oh.
That's the short version,
Owl said. Z was entering commands into Z's pilot monitor, presumably to pick up the two remaining diplomats.
I also had to tell the shuttle what speed I wanted the targets to have relative to the interior of the shuttle and burn off the momentum we suddenly had dumped into the system, and such. Point is, it worked.
Where's the debris?
Behind and above us. It missed us with a couple plint to spare.
You almost killed us.
Almost,
Owl agreed. Please don't do that again.
The good news is, now I don't have to.
Picking up the other two human diplomats was the very definition of anticlimactic. As we headed back to the Conclave's asteroid, Owl restored air to the cabin and opened up the pilot's compartment.
One of the rescued diplomats would like to speak to you,
Owl said. All right. I ducked and found my way to the main cabin. As I did so, a flit nudged past me, nodding. The co-pilot, anxious to get back on duty. I ducked again and entered the cabin. The rescue team were busily attending to the diplomats, all of whom were covered in self-heating blankets and sucking air through masks. All except one, who was covered only in what I now recognized was a Colonial Defenses Forces combat unitard. The unitard's owner was kneeling, speaking to one of the diplomats, a woman with dark curled hair. She was holding his hand with a grip that I imagined would be uncomfortable for anyone other than a genetically engineered super soldier, which is what the unitard's owner was. His green skin gave him away. The soldier saw me and motioned to the woman, who stood up, shakily. She removed her mask and shrugged off her blankets, a bad idea because she started shivering immediately, and walked over to me, hand extended. The soldier stood with her, slightly behind.
Counselor Sorval, the diplomat said. I'm Danielle Lowen, of the United States Department of State. Thank you so much for rescuing me and these other members of my team.
Not at all, Ms. Lowen, I said. Welcome to the Conclave's headquarters. I am only sorry your entrance was so dramatic. Lowen managed a shaky smile.
When you put it that way, so am I.
She began shivering violently. I glanced over at the soldier, who picked up the hint, stepped away, and returned with a blanket.
Loen accepted it gratefully and slumped slightly into the soldier, who bore her weight easily. "Of course, we of the Conclave cannot take all the credit for your rescue," I said, nodding at the soldier.
"I regret to say that I was only 70% successful with my own rescue attempt,"
the soldier said. "No, you were 100% successful," I said. "You got 7 safely to the Chandler, and you knew that if you got the other 3 away from the ship, we would come find you."
"I didn't know," he said. "I did hope."
"How lovely," I said. I turned to Loen. "And you, Ms. Loen, did you hope as well?" "I trusted," Loen said, and looked at the soldier. "It's not the first time this one's tossed me out into space."
"I was with you the whole way the last time, too," the soldier said.
"You were," Loen said. "That doesn't mean we have to keep doing it."
"I will keep that in mind,"
the soldier said. "The two of you have an interesting history, clearly," I said. "We do," Loen said, and then motioned to the soldier. "Counselor Sorval, if I may introduce you to Lieutenant Harry Wilson," I said, finishing her sentence. Loen looked at the both of us. "You two have met before, also?"
"We have," I said.
"I'm popular,"
Wilson said to Loen. "It's not the word I would have used," she said, and smiled. "If memory serves, the last time we met, there were also exploding starships," I said to Wilson. "That's odd," Loen said. "The last time I saw Harry, there were exploding starships, too."
"It's coincidental,"
Wilson said, looking at Loen and then at me. I smiled at him. "Is it?"